Live from the College of Communication, Arts and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Your favorite hour of the day is now underway here on WKAR's Current Sports, coming to you live on WKAR AM 870. 105.1 FM, or you may be checking out the podcast version of the show at WKAR.org or even watching the live stream at Facebook.com/WKAR News. No matter how you may be tuned and locked in, we appreciate you allowing us to be a part of your hump day afternoon. That's right. It is Wednesday, September 12th, 2018, and man, we got a lot to get to. We are finally, as promised, we are finally going to dive into this whole Serena Williams and U.S. Open discussion. I don't know if you guys saw this story, but this broke not too long ago. But tennis umpires reportedly are considering a boycott of Serena Williams matches. I kid you not. This is how big this story has gotten. Umpires are upset about how the Tennis Federation have not had their back, according to them. And they have said, that's it. We are boycotting Serena Williams matches. It has gone this far. You better believe I got some thoughts on this. And it's so unfortunate because we should be talking about the emergence of a young superstar in the world of sports, that being the 20-year-old phenom that she is, the Japanese and Haitian Naomi Osaka. Yet we are discussing the drama that occurred and really took attention from Osaka's truly dominance over the greatest tennis player to ever pick up a racket. So I'll have thoughts on this discussion. I'll have thoughts on tennis umpires deciding to, or I should say considering, a boycott of Serena Williams matches. Don't miss that conversation. We will also have an NPR piece centered on NFL free agent and former Pro Bowler Julius Thomas, who has decided to retire from the NFL after 7 years to pursue a very interesting endeavor. All right. David Green will bring that story to you all, and we will have a brief postscript discussion on that. And on the back end of the show, we will talk about Matt Patricia, head coach of the Detroit Lions. As we all know, the Honolulu Blue off to a horrid start in the NFL 2018 year, just mailing it in against the New York Jets on national TV, Monday Night Football. If you tuned in yesterday, you heard me rip the Detroit Lions organization a new one. Just not happy with what we saw on a national scale in front of the world to see. The Lions beginning a season like that, fans leaving early, just a complete embarrassment. All right, so we'll talk about a story that came out after the dust settled on that Detroit Lions loss, as the New York Jets basically said, look, we knew what Matthew Stafford and the offense were going to do before they even hiked the football. They knew the plays. Matt Patricia heard that and actually downplayed the Jets knowing plays before the hike of a football. Interesting, right? Also want to note that Matt Patricia will have his weekly press conference today at 1:45, so highly unlikely that any news will break during the show unless he comes out and begins to And I'll be looking at Twitter around 1:45 if he comes directly out and starts to address any injury updates with the team or says anything intriguing. We'll bring that to you in the final 15 minutes of the show. And we'll also take a wider look at the college football picture, you know, looking at the Big Ten, discussing more in depth Michigan State, as of course they now go through a bye week, an early bye week in week three, one that I really think they need after the loss to Arizona State on Saturday night. We'll talk about all of that while, of course, inviting you to be a part of the discussion. Multiple ways in which you can weigh in, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News. You can watch the live stream there and comment below that video. And you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, Michigan State Athletics and PNC Bank are partnering to recognize the PNC Achiever Student Athlete of the Month. Throughout the 2018-19 season, deserving Spartan student athletes will be recognized for displaying well-rounded achievement through leadership in the classroom, in the community, and in competition. The honorees for September are seniors Matt Sokol and Davina Nugent. Sokol, of course, is the football team's starting tight end, having appeared in 40 games, including 12 starts. He is a two-time academic All-Big Ten choice, currently pursuing a master's degree in marketing research after graduating last fall with a degree in economics. Sokol is a member of the team's Eagle Leadership Council and was one of 10 Spartans to travel to Houston last fall to assist in the recovery efforts from Hurricane Harvey. Nugent, a marketing major with a sports business management minor, is entering her fourth season as a main contributor to the women's tennis team. She owns a career singles record of 45-28, including a 19-5 mark last year, and a 54-34 record in doubles action. In the classroom, she is a two-time academic All-Big Ten selection and helped her team earn ITA All-Academic Team honors. This summer, Nugent interned with MSU FCU and also the Lansing Lugnuts. So that's a great way to start the headliners, right? Saluting two Spartan athletes for not just their achievements on the field or on the court, but away from it as well. So congratulations to Matt Sokol and Davina Nugent. All right, Canton senior defensive end Darius Robinson is considered the highest-ranked uncommitted recruit in Michigan for the class of 2019. He lists a final five of Michigan State, Syracuse, Colorado, Maryland, and Rutgers. Quote, I'm going to Colorado this weekend. I'm going to Rutgers on September 29th. Michigan State on October 20th for Michigan Week, and then Syracuse on October 27th. So we'll see what happens with the decision of defensive end Darius Robinson. I'm sure that a Michigan State victory against Michigan on October 20th while he's visiting will possibly pay off when it comes to Robinson's decision. Let's hope so, right? All right, Dan Fife, the father of Michigan State men's basketball assistant coach Dane Fife, had to fight back tears yesterday morning when he met with his Clarkston basketball players. He was fighting water in his eyes because it was the final time he would address the players as the program's head coach after 36 seasons of success. As the head coach of the Clarkston boys basketball program, Fife has now announced his retirement. Fife said that the decision had been one he had been wrestling with for a long time, but finally made the decision to retire, having led the Clarkston basketball program to its first two Class A state championships in the previous two seasons. The 69-year-old grandfather is now going to find the time for his family. I'm pretty sure we'll see Dan at a few Michigan State men's basketball games coming this season. All right, the Texas A&M Aggies, Texas Longhorns, and the Michigan Wolverines each have a loss on their 2018 resumes and are on the outside looking in early in the college football playoff, at least right now. But they at least have bragging rights when it comes to making moolah. Yesterday, Chris Smith of Forbes shared the most valuable college football programs from 2014 to 2016. And Texas A&M topped the list at $148 million in revenue and $107 million in profit. The Longhorns were second at $133 million in revenue, $87 million in profit, while the Wolverines came in at third, $127 million in revenue and $75 million in profit, none of which student-athletes receive for playing. Just think about that. Just let that sit on your brain for a second. All right, Benny Fowler. I actually saw this story. Shout out to Alex Sims of Channel 6 News here in Lansing, Michigan. She's from the Boston area, noted New England Patriots fan. And I saw this on her social media page when she did a one-on-one interview with Benny Fowler, former Michigan State wide receiving great. And she posted this immediately when Benny came to her team, when it was announced at least. Benny Fowler, if you remember, he caught Peyton Manning's last pass. Depending on if he can stick with New England, maybe he'll have the same distinction with another legendary quarterback, that being Tom Brady now, because Benny Fowler, a former MSU wide receiver, has landed with the New England Patriots. And, you know, they just keep shuffling through wide receivers on the active roster, trying to find some kind of consistency right now. Fowler spent the first four seasons of his NFL career with the Denver Broncos, grabbing a Super Bowl ring and 56 receptions and 5 TDs in 45 games. He was cut by the Chicago Bears as they finalized their roster earlier this month. So we'll see how Benny ends up performing alongside the greatest quarterback to ever play the game in Tom Brady. All right, after watching him take a pounding against the New York Jets in week one, the Detroit Lions apparently don't need to worry about quarterback Matthew Stafford's health. At least not as it concerns being ready to play in week two. The Lions signal caller had his knee kicked by left tackle Taylor Decker in the second quarter, and briefly left the game in the third after getting sandwiched between two New York Jets defenders. Stafford, however, said during a Tuesday appearance on the Mitch Albom show that he's physically fine as the team prepares for week two. Quote, I'm doing okay. I'm feeling healthy and good to go. Matthew Stafford, say what you will about him, he is one tough son of a gun. All right, from turnovers to an absent running game, the Detroit Lions saw a lot of things go wrong in that loss to the New York Jets. Now, tipping off plays to an opponent, however, is apparently not one of them. After numerous Jets players said they knew what plays were coming, Lions coach Matt Patricia downplayed the opponent's post-game comments and attributed the Jets' success to execution. Quote, I think we are talking about something that's pretty common to when you have to face an opponent. There's going to be things there that you're very familiar with. This is Patricia talking to reporters yesterday in a teleconference. He went on to say, quote, and obviously, I would say on both sides of the ball, there's some high familiarity with some of the things that they do that we worked. They just obviously out-executed us, and that was the biggest problem. So there you have that. Matt Patricia basically saying, look, whoever you play, they're going to be somewhat familiar with what you are going to do. So he kind of downplayed the New York Jets, basically saying, yeah, we knew what plays the Lions were calling. We'll have more on that story later on this hour. This is the time in a big league season when weather turns comfortable and rosters become expandable. It's September, and the games for non-playoff teams, like a certain bunch from Detroit, the Tigers, becomes as much dress rehearsal for next February spring camp as regular season closeouts. Now, as the regular season closeout, And the Tigers flashed lots of their showroom fresh 2018 model flesh at different positions last night at Comerica Park to varying degrees of success as they played their usual pesky game that didn't stop them from losing to the Houston Astros 5-4. I know many of you Detroit Tigers fans are just saying, just please, just end the season. We're tired of hearing about the Tigers. Yeah, it's not a great season. Rebuild mode in full effect for the Detroit Tigers. All right, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. A lot to get to. Again, we will be discussing Matt Patricia and the Detroit Lions and Patricia downplaying the Jets, supposedly knowing the Detroit Lions plays. Also, you get to hear a pretty interesting NPR story from David Green as he talks with NFL free agent and former Pro Bowler Julius Thomas about his decision to retire from the National Football League after 7 years and pursue a very interesting endeavor. You don't want to miss that. And then on the back end of the show, we will have a wide picture look at the world of college football as we now approach week 3. If you would like to be involved and be a part of this Wednesday afternoon version of Current Sports, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to Facebook.com/WKAR News. Check out the live stream there. Comment below the video. And you can tweet us. Tweet the show at WKAR_sports or tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR. We start our hour of discussion with Serena Williams and the U.S. Open. Okay. Yeah, we've been previewing this conversation throughout the week here on WKAR's Current Sports. It was one of the leading sports stories coming out of the weekend. Saturday afternoon and into the evening, Serena Williams played a 20-year-old phenom by the name of Naomi Osaka at the U.S. Open Championship in New York City. And this was a match unlike any tennis match I've ever seen. I watched it from beginning to end just to see if Serena was yet again going to add to that incredible legacy that, in my opinion, already has her noted as the greatest women's tennis player of all time. Arguably the greatest tennis player, period, male or female, of all time. That didn't happen, though, as Naomi Osaka just owns Serena. Let's just call it like it is. She's unreal. Her serve is dynamite. It reminds me of a young Serena Williams. It really does. The way she moves on the court, the angle she takes. She's amazing. She's amazing. And when you listen to her away from the tennis court, you know, she's so shy, so reluctant to be in front of the camera, yet she just transforms when she's on that court. She is amazing. She became the first Japanese-born player, period, to win a major in her defeat of Serena Williams over the weekend. But that accomplishment has, of course, been tremendously overshadowed due to what took place. The drama that unfolded that had nothing to do with the on-court brilliance of Naomi Osaka. And let's keep it all real, all the way real here. Carlos Ramos, the chair ump, took away a great moment for Naomi Osaka. I really felt for her, as many did, when Tom Rinaldi came out after the match was said and done. And, you know, he's getting ready to announce Naomi Osaka as the 2018 U.S. Open champ. And as soon as he opens up his mic, just boos riddled the court. Boos left and right. And Naomi sitting there, I mean, young 20-year-old who grew up admiring Serena Williams. That is her tennis idol, her tennis hero. There was a picture floating around before the match of Naomi, a young Naomi Osaka, taking a selfie with Serena back in the day. And again, this wasn't the first time that Naomi Osaka played Serena Williams. She actually played Serena earlier on in the tennis calendar and beat Serena Williams just as Serena was coming back from, of course, the pregnancy scare. So this wasn't her first time playing Serena Williams. But on this kind of a stage, the U.S. Open, a major, you can become the first Japanese-born player, male or female, to win a major going against your idol in Serena Williams. She did one heck of a job controlling her nerves and going out there and playing some great tennis. But all of that is overshadowed because of the Carlos Ramos and Serena Williams spat. For those of you who have been living under a rock and don't know anything about this story, I'll briefly take you through what happened. Second set, Osaka serving at 0-1. 40-15 was the score. And Carlos Ramos, who is a pretty strict chair umpire, he's known for being pretty strict. Carlos Ramos interjected himself into the match for the first time, calling a code violation for coaching, which is a formal warning. Carlos Ramos caught Patrick Mouratoglou, who is Serena Williams' coach. She caught Patrick in the stands essentially coaching Serena Williams. He was using these hand gestures that to me looked like he was trying to tell Serena to come closer to the net. You're too far, come closer to the net. He was using these hand gestures to signal that. Well, Carlos Ramos saw that, said, nope, you can't do that. There's this ridiculous rule in tennis that you cannot receive coaching at the U.S. Open from the stands. Your coach cannot give you coaching. Isn't that what a coach is supposed to do? A coach is supposed to coach, right? So Carlos Ramos sees this hand violation in the stands and gives Serena a warning. Serena completely flips out, and you just heard the audio in our introduction there. She completely flips out, goes to the chair umpire, and just loses it. And says, quote, one thing I've never done is cheat, ever. And she continues this rant and, you know, the famous meme that has come out of that moment, quote, I don't cheat to win, I'd rather lose. I'm just letting you know that quote is everywhere now. So then she returns to business and Osaka held her serve. Now, during the next changeover, Williams and Ramos had a civil conversation. She actually called him umpire. Williams explained to Ramos that she understood why he may have thought Patrick was coaching from the stands, but stressed that she never did that. She did not look up in the stands to her coach. Now, I don't think that Serena Williams understood the rule here. I've not heard her clarify this during a press conference, during the press conference after, directly after, or in a statement. And I don't think she understood that due to the conduct violation that she received when it comes to her coach coaching, again, ridiculous, coaching, also something that many, many coaches in tennis do. Don't ever get a code violation for it. But due to that being a code violation, any conduct violation that she receives from there on out will result in a point for Osaka. Because if she understood that, in my estimation, she would not have thrown down her racket in the second set. You can't do that. It's a no-no. You will be penalized for it, and you will receive a violation. In this case, seeing as though it was her second violation because the first one was for coaching, Osaka gets a point. Then Williams lost it again, became very angry, and went to the chair judge and attacked him and basically said, "You owe me an apology. You know, you stole a point from me." And then she goes on with Osaka leading in this second set, 4-3. Goes on to call Carlos Ramos a thief. And when that was said, Carlos Ramos indicated that he would not apologize. And actually, he gave a game, which is pretty big in the world of tennis because you only need 12 to win, right? And you give a full game to Osaka. and Serena flips. And then you have representatives of the U.S. Open that came down. And Brian Early and Donna Kelso, they both came down and tried to talk with Serena. And long story short, Serena goes on to lose. All right? Osaka beats her idol. A few things we got to put in perspective here. And again, the latest story coming out of this is that tennis umpires are reportedly considering a boycott of Serena Williams matches. I want to take you through my thought process as I watch that. And now that I've taken a few days now to kind of process what has happened since Saturday. Number one, first point should be made here is that Carlos Ramos took away a great moment for Naomi Osaka on Saturday. That is who we should be praising and talking about here after the U.S. Open. But unfortunately, that is not the case. I saw the Today Show actually have Naomi on, and you know, she's getting some pub, and it's really interesting because you're seeing those who interview Naomi. I mean, she goes through and recaps her emotions standing up there, you know, on stage, and how she didn't know whether or not the crowd was booing her. And she knew the crowd was rooting for Serena because everybody does, right? And she just felt bad. And you see tears streaming down her face. She takes you through her emotions. And you see those who are interviewing her saying, "Look, Naomi, you're a champ. You're a champ." You know, almost having to kind of pump her up because I don't know if she truly feels like a champ after what happened on Saturday. Carlos Ramos stole that moment for Naomi Osaka. Carlos Ramos is known for being a bit overly strict. And I thought in the moment, when it comes to this idiotic rule that your coach can't coach from the stands, which is ridiculous, right? I mean, in golf, you know, look at another elitist sport in golf. In majors, you have your caddy coaching you right there throughout the entire four rounds. Your caddy's right there. You're going through shots with your caddy. You're not out there on an island. Your caddy can talk to you and coach you through some things. Why can't that be the same in the world of tennis? That's a really archaic rule. I don't understand that whatsoever. And it's not like the coach is standing there right next to you. That coach is in the stands. It's an idiotic rule that needs to change. Don't understand that. But let's be real here. Patrick did coach Serena Williams. Because, and even when you look back at the broadcast, I encourage you to go back and look at what led up to that moment, especially that moment. I mean, Serena Williams, after, you know, and again, she said she didn't see those hand signals, but after that happens and that violation occurs, Serena starts going to the net. She says she didn't see it, but something must have clicked because she starts going to the net and it earned her a few points. But you never see, I have never seen that rule enforced in the world of tennis. A coach coaching from the stands, you get a violation for that. Carlos, really? And even if so, why not give Serena a warning? Why go full bore and issue a violation? Why not say Serena Williams, well, Jack, you're saying that she got a warning. She got a warning, but she got issued a cold violation, which was her first violation. And any violation after that, Jack, she gets a point deducted. That's what happened here. So issue Serena a warning. Don't make it a violation, because anything Serena does from there on out, she's going to have to be extra careful. And breaking the racket was the second violation. And according to the rule book, that leads to a point. Why not say, Serena, hey, you keep your coach in check. You can't look up, or keep him in check. Give him a signal to stop, because if he continues to do it, then I am going to issue a violation. Don't understand that. Carlos Ramos, when it comes to, and that's why, you know, in this regard of the conversation, Serena Williams arguing that if this was a male, this would not have happened. I'll just throw this out there, because I looked up some examples of Carlos Ramos being strict, and you don't have to. He's been doing this throughout his entire career, actually, and not just when it comes to Serena Williams, who is a female tennis player, but also when it comes to males, too. It's just what he does. The 2017 French Open, Novak Djokovic given a fault on serve for a time violation. Then he was given a code violation for conduct due to him yelling. These are males. Rafael Nadal, that same year at the same event, the 2017 French Open, a time violation given to Rafael Nadal, which you never see in tennis. A time violation given to Rafael Nadal. Nadal thought it was selectively enforced. Don't have to go too far for this one either. 2018 Wimbledon. Novak Djokovic, again, he got a code violation for slamming his racket. Which you can't do. I mean, what you expect there, right? But you hear these accounts when it comes to Carlos Ramos. He is notorious for him being overly strict. But you know what? When you look at what he did on Saturday, and this is what he has going for him here. Carlos Ramos has the luxury in his argument of saying that, look, what I enforced is all in the tennis rule book. I did not break any rules here. Do I believe he was excessive? Without a doubt. Carlos Ramos was overly excessive in the violations he issued to Serena Williams on Saturday. Serena has a valid point there. It is rare, if ever, when we see an entire game. That's huge. Need 12 to win, and you give Naomi Osaka an entire game for a violation of conduct? For calling you a thief? So many males have done far worse. Serena has a valid point there. And again, as I stated at the beginning of this week, just because you can, Carlos, just because you can issue those violations, you can do that, doesn't mean you should. This is the U.S. Open. You don't see those kind of violations normally enacted at the U.S. Open. Why did you decide to do that on that stage, penalizing Serena Williams, who, by the way, was already down one set going against Naomi Osaka? And that's the thing that really gets me, that really irks me, that Serena Williams was probably already going to lose to Naomi Osaka. why not issue a warning there? If you felt some kind of way, if you felt some type of way, why not issue a warning? Because there are a lot of males who have done far worse and have not been deducted and penalized the way that you penalized Serena Williams on Saturday. Tennis needs to really evaluate its rules. I'll say that again. Tennis needs to really evaluate its rules, because the rules that we saw enacted on Saturday with Carlos Ramos, I mean, yeah, he was acting within the rule book. But I'll also say this too. Serena could have controlled her emotions much better than what she did. She has to own her actions on Saturday. She really does. I get the insinuation of the whole coaching from the stands being a rule violation and violating your integrity as a player, something that you have always stood behind. You have never cheated. We all know that, Serena. Why couldn't you just address it, put it in the rear view, focus, and try and dig yourself out of that hole against Naomi Osaka? And you could have controlled your emotions better when you threw down the racket, which, again, I don't know if you fully understood that if you did violate conduct after that coaching violation, that you would be docked a point. Serena kind of reached a breaking point, but being the great tennis player that she is, I really believe that she could have had a chance in coming back in this match if she would have controlled her emotions better. The fact that that coaching violation occurred, which never happens to her, and Carlos Ramos decided to pull that card, pile on the fact that you're getting your butt kicked by Naomi Osaka, your emotions just boiled over and you allowed it to take it. You allowed that moment to take you out your game. So Serena has to own that as well. Are there valid points when it comes to sexism here? I do believe you have some points, Serena. Certainly. But you got to own your actions too. Which isn't a popular opinion, but I'm saying that. So, you know, the tennis umpire is reportedly considering a boycott of all matches that have to do with Serena Williams is utterly ridiculous to me. I mean, and what kind of pressure are you really putting on the Tennis Federation here? You're easily replaceable, all right? They'll find somebody to become the chair ump during Serena Williams matches. All right, I don't know what point you're trying to make here. You know that the Tennis Federation doesn't have your back fully. Come on, man, that's petty. Come on, I don't understand that fully. I just don't understand. And then also this story concerning the cartoon. I put this on my Facebook page and it really blew up, and it just disheartening and very sickening. But Mark Knight of the Australian Herald Sun, he is a cartoonist for the Australia Herald Sun. He put together a cartoon that is both racist and sexist, if you ask me. It's a photo of Serena Williams, who looks like this big, muscular, intimidating figure, big lips, big nose, looks nothing like Serena Williams. You know, throwing down her racket, her racket's underneath her feet as she basically cries like a baby midway in the air, and there's a pacifier next to her. And then on the other side of the court, you can see the chair umpire, Carlos Ramos, supposed to be Carlos Ramos, saying in a text bubble, "Can you just let her win?" Talking to Naomi Osaka, who doesn't even look like Naomi Osaka, looks like a blonde white female. That's what it looks like. Blonde hair. Just incredibly sexist and incredibly racist, if you ask me. In all honesty, I mean, Serena Williams, I mean, look, it reminds you of like a Sambo cartoon from back in the day. It depicts her as an angry black female and very, like, very hulkish. I don't get it. And the shocking thing about this is that this newspaper doesn't realize just how bad of a look this truly is. The newspaper is doubling down, and they have Mark Knight's back when it comes to this cartoon. And If you read the latest piece defending Mark Knight that they've published, it says, quote, "Welcome to the PC world. This is a satire-free zone." I just don't know how. Sometimes I feel like, you know, it's 2018, but sometimes I feel like, you know, again, I was born in 1990. Sometimes I just have thoughts like, man, this must be how it felt to like grow up as a black person in the 60s. That's how I feel sometimes, truly, with what I've seen happen recently here in America. It's just like, really? I just don't understand it. I don't understand how an editor can look at that picture and say, yo, that looks great. Yeah, look, well, we're going to publish that, let alone double down and back Mark Knight for it. I don't get it. And this is not the first time Mark Knight has really drew fire, literally, for his cartoons. He had a depiction of black teenagers vandalizing a train station that was published earlier this year. I'll chalk this one up as ignorance. I don't know if Mark Knight, well, let's be real here. He does not know what images like that, what harm and what historical implications they have when it comes to African Americans. I just don't get it. A lot to unpack there as a listener, I know. But I want to hear your thoughts. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Go to facebook.com/WKAR News. You can weigh in there on our live stream. And you can tweet us. Tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR_sports. All right. We get our first break. When we come back, we will have an NPR piece courtesy of David Green as he talks to NFL free agent and former Pro Bowler Julius Thomas about his decision to retire and his latest endeavor. That and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. You just heard my thoughts on the whole Serena Williams controversy at the U.S. Open in New York City on Saturday. Naomi Osaka, a budding star in the world of tennis, the Japanese-Haitian phenom, beating Serena Williams. But that's not the story. Serena Williams and her spat with Carlos Ramos is the story. A lot to unpack there. You heard my thoughts, though. You know, Carlos Ramos, a notorious judge, or I should say chair umpire, due to the fact that he is known for being just overly harsh, critical, strict. And, you know, in this argument, a few points I wanted to make again and reiterate. Again, Carlos Ramos, in this argument, has the luxury of saying that he did act within the rules. But just because you can does not mean you should. And there is complete inconsistency in comparison to how Serena Williams was issued these violations in comparison to how her male counterparts don't get those violations. So but with that being said, I make this point as well. Serena could have controlled her emotions better. She has to own those actions. She could have put that initial violation of coaching from the stands with Patrick, her coach. She could have put that in the rear view and focused. She did not. And she continued to nip at the judge, and the judge did not have her back, as we saw. All right. But there is a conversation that needs to be had here. I mean, and Serena has a point. I mean, her male counterparts don't get penalized like that. They just don't. And then this whole cartoon, which is just shameful, disgraceful, ignorant. from Mark Knight of the Australian Herald Sun. And the newspaper is actually doubling down, and they have Mark Knight's back, depicting Serena as hulkish, big lips, big nose, doesn't look anything like her, muscular. Now, while you see Naomi Osaka on the other side talking with Carlos Ramos, and Carlos Ramos saying, can you just let her win? And it does not look anything like Naomi Osaka. Looks like a white female blonde. I just don't know how you can look at that cartoon and say, oh, yeah, that's fine. I just don't get that. And then the other story of now tennis umpires reportedly considering boycotting matches of Serena Williams. This story has completely blown up. Line one right now, and I know, man, back-to-back days where we see from, well, we hear, I should say, from my man Austin from KZoo, one of my favorite callers. Austin, how do you have this much free time, man? I hope you didn't get laid off, did you? Thank you so much for calling.
No, man, I still got a job. I'm just on the road today, so I figured I'd call the number one sports show in America and time in.
Well, thank you for that, Austin. We always love hearing from you, man. And I know if you have really been chomping at the bit to get to this story, because when I posted my thoughts on it, I believe it was on Facebook, you said, Al, I can't wait until your show on Monday to call in and weigh in on this. But, you know, unfortunately, just now here on Wednesday, we're just now getting to it. I want to give you the forum to kind of sound off on what you just heard from me and just your overall thoughts on the U.S. Open and the controversy with Serena Williams.
Yeah, man. So I agree 100% with everything you said, man, and especially with the cartoon. A lot of people were saying, like, initially, Serena Williams is making this a sexist issue in America, is making this a racist issue, and it's not even that. People are overreacting. But when that cartoon came out, to your point, it totally validated that argument of people that, you know, it's a racial thing and it's a sexist thing. And my biggest takeaway from it is it's so unfortunate for Naomi Osaka because she didn't get to enjoy the moment like a true champion should have. And she was almost apologetic about winning the U.S. Open, which mm-hmm. you never see from a champion. And I feel like Serena she had a little bit of sense of entitlement during her rants, because, and correct me if I'm wrong, one of those points, she beat, she basically skunked Naomi. She didn't score a single point. And right after that, she went back to arguing with Carlos Ramos. And I thought at that point, I was like, okay, Serena has her head together. She's going to turn it around. But she went right back to arguing with him. And unfortunately, she doesn't have the grace to continue that argument. In my opinion, she should have let it go and took away, and it took away from the moment of Osaka, and it all rooted in Carlos Ramos. And then one last thing I'll share that was pretty cool, a cool experience. I was actually in LAX in Los Angeles Airport watching the match because we were flying back from our honeymoon, and a flight from Japan had just got in. So it was probably like 10 people from Japan sitting in a restaurant watching the tennis match. And at the end of it, they were all cheering. They were on their phones recording the TV screen because it was a moment in Japanese history that this is the first time that they'll ever experience, man. And you hear a story, and I witnessed that, and it just sucked that the fans got to enjoy it, but Osaka didn't get to enjoy it like she wanted to.
Wow, what a story, Austin. I mean, it just happens. You guys are coming back from your honeymoon, and then you see a flight come in that has some Japanese attendees on, and they're sitting there rejoicing, and you see Naomi Osaka, who was riddled with booze when the mic opened for Tom Rinaldi. I thought it was a cool moment, though, where, you know, I think Serena, and that's a good point that you bring up. As soon as she hugged Naomi Osaka, she immediately goes to Carlos Ramos and again, just continues to voice her frustration. And I think in recollection, her upper on that stage, it didn't really hit her until she heard those boos that, okay, let me take a step back. Let me push forward this unreal young phenom of a player and put this to a halt. And she said, crowd, basically, look, no more boos. Naomi won. Give her some credit. So I like that she did that.
Yeah, and if you think about it, man, the thing that nobody is talking about, how Naomi dominated the entire match.
Unreal, yeah.
She was able to get this 15-plus veteran out of her game mentally so much to the point where she just emotionally fell apart. And Osaka's maturity on the court showed, man. It was amazing to watch. And my hat goes off to Naomi, man. Like I said, I'm sorry that she had to go through that. But I hope her parents and her coaches and other people really help her realize the magnitude of what she did. And she owns up to the fact that I just dominated my idol. I'm 2-0 against my idol, and this will go down in history, and I'm one of the GOATs because I beat my idol.
Very great call, Austin. You knocked that out the park. Thank you so much for calling, man. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. I just might take your job now.
Yeah, I better watch my back. I better count my paychecks, right?
Exactly. at least I'll come for Alex's job. So.
There you go. All right, Austin, appreciate it.
All right. Talk to you later.
Great points made there from Austin from KZU. Really appreciate you weighing in, my man. And yeah, Naomi Osaka, she's going to be good. Really, really good for a long time. 20 years old is what we're talking about. Your thoughts, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. We got about 9 minutes left in the show. You can weigh in. Real quick, before I throw to this Julius Thomas story from NPR's David Green, you guys have been taking this in behind the glass, Jack Kerwin and Alec Rio. Just quick thoughts before we get to this piece, Jack.
Yeah, great point by you, and great job bringing up the kind of history of Carlos Ramos with, you know, being a little over the top, issuing penalties. You know,
not just with Serena here,
no,
right?
Not
those
at
are
all.
Males,
right?
Novak
absolutely.
Djokovic and Rafael Nadal. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. And you know what? When I first heard Serena, I played tennis growing up, and when I first heard Serena, when I first heard the bite of her saying, you know, men get away with a lot more than you know what I just got a penalty for, I was skeptical of it at first, and then I saw a tweet from about 10 years ago where Roger Federer dropped multiple F-bombs on a chair umpire, and the umpire basically just ignored him.
Yeah.
So, you know, at the end of the day, is Carlos Ramos sexist? I don't know. You know, was his ruling sexist? But I think she certainly has a point here, like you brought up, that, you know, there kind of seems to be a double standard in tennis right now.
I agree. Great. Very well said there, Jack. Alec, you've been listening to this entire hour. Just brief thoughts.
So basically, I have a problem with Ramos's ruling with Serena Williams because I saw a compilation video on YouTube of the male tennis players who have done a lot worse than what Serena Williams has done, and they didn't get issued anything.
Exactly.
And it's and she does have a fair point because, like, all she did was call him a thief, and then he just cited verbal abuse and just gave the game penalty to her, and that just makes no sense to me. Like, I don't think that sexism is like a direct thing of it, but I do think that there definitely could be like an underlying thing that could
for
be the
sure.
reason.
Subconsciously.
For sure.
Subconsciously. Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a sad thing, and I think that these kind of conversations are certainly healthy in 2018.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. But in order for them to be productive, we have to have an open mind and try to see things from the other point of view. And that's what I did when I heard Serena Williams have that rant. And then at the post-game press conference, she talked about how I'm fighting for women's rights. And I looked back at that moment and said, yeah, okay, you have some valid points here, without a doubt. Great job, Alec. All right, to close out the hour, David Green of NPR talks to NFL free agent and former Pro Bowler Julius Thomas about his decision to retire from the National Football League after 7 years to pursue a doctorate in psychology and study sport brain trauma.
Julius Thomas's life has pretty much been all about football. The 7-year NFL veteran and former Pro Bowler who played for the Denver Broncos and other teams says the journey to becoming an athlete takes up every bit of your energy.
You're so determined to get to the next step. You become consumed by it. And then as you start to realize that impermanence, that you're not going to be able to do this forever. And then you start to think, okay, well, what is it that I want to do?
Well, in a recent essay for the Players Tribune, Thomas announced what he wants to do. He's going to retire and pursue a PhD in psychology. He wants to study brain trauma and CTE, the degenerative brain disease caused by multiple head injuries. Thomas told me via Skype that players have to live in a state of denial.
You always knew this may be the play where your knee is never the same again. This may be the play where your spine's never the same again. You're not particularly concerned about the long-term effects of your brain because you're focused on just getting out of today healthy. So you can't spend the time and energy on thinking about what your survival and what your lifestyle is going to be like when you're 50, 60 years old.
You know, in a way, you're going to be studying and probing what's wrong and what's dangerous about a sport that so many of your mentors and coaches and fellow teammates are all still, you know, experiencing and profiting from. How do you navigate that?
You know, I think that football, yes, it is a risky endeavor. I wouldn't tell people not to do it. But the key, I think, for that is understanding what those risks are. And then once you know what your risks are, then you're able to own it. Also, the more we study it, the more we'll be able to help prevent different things. Like, we first have to understand, you know, what it is we're at risk for. And then we can start developing ways of helping people kind of mitigate that risk as they participate in football.
But you were playing basketball in college, right? I mean, it's a less dangerous sport. Like, why is football worth the risk?
The thing specific about football, I think that there's a courage factor that's just a little bit different than any other sports.
When I hear you say courage factor, the first thing I think about is whether the risk of injury, the risk of, I mean, those hard hits and what it does to your body, the courage to face that is in some ways exactly what makes football more rewarding. Is that what you're saying?
I think that that's why it has such a huge fan base. When you see somebody running downfield to catch that football, you're able to relate to the fear that must be inside of them. Because you're going, wow, I don't know how that guy went out there, took that hit, got back up. I don't know how that guy limped off the field and he limped back on. This is able to relate to people on that human level of struggle. I think that football kind of puts that on display in a unique way.
I mean, you love this sport. Would you be ready to come out and say, based on the science, based on what I have learned, based on my research, this sport should not go on?
I can give you all the information that I can to help you make the decision I think is best. But I don't believe in controlling the actions of others. So I think that I may be less excited. I may counsel people differently. But ultimately, I would be very surprised if I ended up taking a stance on saying that football shouldn't be played.
Julius Thomas, best of luck in the next stage of your journey and going back to school. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
How about that? David Green, thank you so much from NPR, discussing Julius Thomas and his decision to retire and now study brain trauma in the world of sports. Pretty insightful stuff. I have a brief postscript discussion on that on tomorrow's Current Sports. We'll also have a recap from Matt Patricia's press conference that is underway right now as he is giving thoughts on the loss, the embarrassing loss for the Lions on Monday Night Football. We'll have that and more on the Thursday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. I'm Al Martin, reminding you to always be easy, people.